Testament scriptures and to the book of the prophet Ezekiel. I turn to this book not without trepidation. For one thing, I have never expounded Ezekiel before. Not that that should be a source necessarily of trepidation, but particularly since this is known as a rather difficult book, and it is a largely unfamiliar book to many people, and yet we turn to it in the faith and trust that God has something to say to us in its pages. And we do so because this, in fact, is the only prophetic book in the Old Testament that we have not so far studied together over the years. Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Daniel, the three major prophetic books, have already occupied us, two in the midweek service and one on Sunday evenings, and all the minor prophets, both pre-exilic and post-exilic, have been covered in the course of the years. And Ezekiel completes our reading of the Old Testament literature. We've still a number of Old Testament books to do. Someone expressed the concern some little time ago to me, what would we do when we had gone through all the books of the Bible? The thought being that there would be nothing else to do. To which I said, well, we would start at the beginning again. Which is precisely what we will do if God spares us. No exposition, no single exposition of any book would ever be sufficient to get everything that's to be got out of it. And B, we're not the same people who come to a particular book that we were when we came to it last time. We have changed. We have been changed, and therefore there are always wonderful new opportunities of discovering fresh things, fresh insights. This is the marvelous thing about God's Word. So I think I'm pretty safe in saying that between now and the year 2000, if we're spared, we're not likely to run out of material. So you can be quite content on that score. This is just 1970. Well, Ezekiel is a large book, 48 chapters, almost as big as Jeremiah and Isaiah. And as with these two prophetic books, Isaiah and Jeremiah, so here also we shall attempt to take a sweep through the book. Doing perhaps as many as three chapters in an evening, so as to enable us within the compass of, say, 3 or 4 months or so, to grasp the essential message that it brings to us. Now, obviously, we could spend very much longer on the book than 4 months, 16 Wednesdays. When we do a New Testament book like Romans, for example, or one of the Gospels, it may take us a year or 18 months or even 2 years. New Testament exposition lends itself to that kind of detailed exegesis. But I think in the main, in the Old Testament, it's important for us to see the general message as a whole, and therefore this means sweeping through the book. And particularly in one of the major prophets like Jeremiah, Isaiah, or Ezekiel, this is a good way of studying it, at least for the first time. So this evening, I want, and indeed I will be very content, to give an introductory word on the book as a whole, without going into the text as such, except in an introductory capacity, looking at one or two of the opening verses. And we begin by dealing with two necessary considerations. The first is the historical context and background of the prophecy, and secondly, an analysis of the book. Now, I'm very sure that unless we get these two points clear in our minds, we'll not really make much of this study. And so we're going to spend this first evening on Ezekiel dealing in the main with these two issues. And if we've time to say one or two things towards the end by way of introduction to the text. The historical context and background then. Ezekiel prophesied immediately before, during, and after the captivity of the people of God by the Babylonian tyrant Nebuchadnezzar. Now, if you have at home our daily Bible readings on 2 Kings, that's going back to December 1961 through to February 1962, and also the notes on some of the minor prophets, Zephaniah, Obadiah, and Nahum, which came out in the record in 1965, these will be a very useful ancillary reading matter to give general background information. Now, next Wednesday, God willing, I hope we may have a sheet duplicated to give the salient points of the history and an attempt at some kind of analysis of the book, so that we can be looking at that while we're studying it to use it as a guideline. But tonight, may I just remind you of the general chronology of the period before us. You recall how after the death of King Solomon, David's son, the kingdom divided into two. The northern kingdom, Israel, with its capital Samaria. The southern kingdom, Judah, with its capital Jerusalem. The northern kingdom didn't have a single good king in all its sorry history. They were, to a man, evil and abandoned wretches. And the then reigning world power, Assyria, took the northern kingdom into captivity in 732 and 721 BC. And that was the end of the northern kingdom Israel. The southern kingdom had a number of good kings interspersed with a considerable number of bad ones. Men like Asa and Jehoshaphat and so on. And nearer our time tonight, Josiah. And they had the effect of putting a brake upon the downward dash to ruin of the southern kingdom. But the southern kingdom, for all that, finally came to ruin at the hands of the next world empire, Babylon, under Nebuchadnezzar the emperor. And it's that captivity that we're dealing with in the book of Ezekiel. This is the same situation, roughly, as we saw foretold in the book of the prophet Jeremiah, who prophesied in Josiah's reign. Now, the last few kings of the southern kingdom were as follows. Hezekiah, who reigned at the turn of the 7th century, 700 or so BC, and then Hezekiah's son, the wickedest of them all, King Manasseh, who reigned for nearly 50 years and brought the nation to irrevocable disaster. Then Amon, his son, who was almost as bad. And then the young King Josiah, who came to the throne about 638 or 640 B.C. and reigned for 30 years. And during young Josiah's reign, the most remarkable spiritual awakening and revival and reformation took place. And the whole nation was cleaned up, morally and spiritually. It was an amazing time. And it all stemmed from the day that the book of the law, you remember, was discovered, rediscovered in the temple. What a wonderful thought. The recovery of the Word of God led to a widespread national revival and awakening. And there's no doubt at all that this was one of the most significant periods in the history of God's people. It was a tremendous time. Josiah came to a sad and inglorious end at the Battle of Megiddo, when he was slain by Pharaoh, king of Egypt. It was wrong of him to have gone to battle with Pharaoh, but he insisted on going, and he died in 608 BC. And with the death of Josiah, the last hope for God's people was extinguished. Following Josiah's death, his son Jehoahaz came to the throne and reigned only 3 months. He was succeeded by his brother Jehoiakim, with an M, who reigned from 608 to 597. He was succeeded by his son Jehoiakim, who reigned also only 3 months, and it was in his reign that the captivity happened. And this is the king that we are introduced to in the opening verses of the book of Ezekiel. Now it came to pass in the 30th year, in the 4th month, in the 5th day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river of Kibar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. In the 5th day of the month, which was the 5th year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. Jehoiakim, the son of Jehoiakim, and therefore the grandson of Josiah, was taken into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. Now, let me just finish the historical picture. When Nebuchadnezzar took Jehoiakim into captivity in 597, he installed a puppet king in his place in Jerusalem, whose name was made Zedekiah. And Zedekiah reigned for 11 years in Jerusalem, from 597 to 586. He was obedient to his overlord, Nebuchadnezzar, for about 8 years. And then, entering into intrigue with some of the surrounding kinglets in the neighboring nations, he started an insurrection against Nebuchadnezzar, and this brought the armed might of Babylon to the gates of Jerusalem, and Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to the city for 2 years, and at the end of that time, in 586 BC, Nebuchadnezzar breached the walls of Jerusalem and razed the city to the ground and took the rest of the people into captivity. Now you see, the captivity, therefore, under Nebuchadnezzar, took place in 2 stages. The first stage, 597 BC. The second, 586. In the first captivity, King Jehoiakim was taken to Babylon, along with the princes and nobles of Judah and most of the important people of the city, and only odds and sods of no importance were left, but the city was still standing. 11 years later, through the insurrection of Zedekiah, Nebuchadnezzar came back and brought the city crashing down in ruins and took the rest of them. So that it was the second point that Nebuchadnezzar breached Jerusalem, and Jerusalem was razed to the ground. Now, among the captives who were taken in the first batch, I have already pointed out, and we read of this in 2 Kings chapters 23 and 24. We could turn these up with profit tonight and see just the kind of history that took place. Among the first captives that went in 597, along with King Jehoiakim
And all the chief men, the chief princes, the nobles, and the chief priests, and so on, was Ezekiel, who was of the high priestly family. He was of noble family, if we can understand aright the autobiographical references in the book. And he was among those who were taken to Babylon in the first batch. Now, it's this, it seems to me, that explains and provides the key to an understanding of the book. Because if you didn't understand that there were these two aspects of the captivity separated by a period of 11 years, then you might get very mixed up and very confused as you read what you will read in Ezekiel. Because at some points he seems to be speaking to captives in exile. At other points he seems to be speaking about people still in Jerusalem. And you begin to scratch your head and say, now what in the world are we reading here? Where are we? Well, this is the explanation. Ezekiel was taken captive to Babylon in the first batch of captives. And during these 11 years, he was called by God. And indeed, in the fifth year, as we're told in the opening verses, he was called by God and commissioned by God to speak the word of the Lord to the exiles in Babylon. Now, what was he to say? Well, I'll tell you. Let me come to it in a roundabout way. Those of you who were with us during our studies in the book of Jeremiah will recall how when the captivity was imminent and coming upon the people, Jeremiah cried out to the people of Judah, serve the king of Babylon and live. A very unpalatable message, doubtless, to the people of God. Serve the king of Babylon and live. But he was simply being realistic. He was expressing the conviction that this captivity was from God and that nothing they could do could alter the fact. Judgment was appointed for them, and therefore it was their wisdom to submit to it and not go into insurrection as Zedekiah did against Babylon. You're wasting your time, said Jeremiah. You're wasting your time. Serve the king of Babylon and live. Accept it and learn the lessons that God is teaching you in this terrible disaster. Serve the king of Babylon, live. Go to Babylon, because the exile is going to be a long, long time. And let God's purposes be fulfilled in you in this judgment. The people of God, of course, refused this word from Jeremiah to their cost. But that was what he said. Now, Ezekiel's word is much the same. Because these men who were taken captive with Jehoiakim in 597, went to Babylon, and after a very little time, hopes began to awaken in their hearts. And they began to say to themselves, well, it's perhaps not so bad after all. We'll soon get back. Jerusalem's still standing. We'll soon get back. And they built up false hopes, aided and abetted by false prophets who were with them, who said, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Who tried to persuade the people and beguile the people into thinking that everything was going to work out all right and that they would soon be back to their beloved Jerusalem. And God raised up this man Ezekiel to go to these exiles and say, no, you're all wrong. The city, Jerusalem, is going to fall. And the exile is going to last a long, long time. That, in effect, was Ezekiel's message. The city will fall, and the exile will be long. Now, these statements that I've made help us considerably in seeking to make a proper analysis of this book, this prophecy. For, in fact, the book bears a number of dates, and this is a welcome change from the book of the prophecy of Jeremiah, because we found that Jeremiah's material was all lumped together with different dates, and one chapter we were dealing with an early date, and the next we'd be dealing with a late date, and the next again we'd be back to an earlier period, and it was very difficult for us to know where we were. But Ezekiel's material is set out in a most orderly fashion. Now I want you, first of all, to look at these dates. We'll go right through the book and see there are 9 or 10 dates which are mentioned here. The first in chapter 1, verse 2. The fifth day of the month, which was the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. Well, the captivity of Jehoiakim took place in 597, as I've said. So the fifth year of the captivity would be 592. That's the first date here. Then in chapter 3, verse 16, we have a subsidiary date, and it came to pass at the end of 7 days. Now that's 7 days after this primary vision, so that's still in the year 592. Then in chapter 8, verse 1, and it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth month, in the fifth day of the month. That's the following year, 591 BC. And then over to chapter 20. And it came to pass in the seventh year, in the fifth month, in the tenth day of the month, 590 BC. And then chapter 24, verse 1, again in the ninth year of the captivity, that's 588, chapter 26, verse 1, in the 11th year of the captivity, that's 586, chapter 29, verse 1, in the 10th year. Now this is the only place where we reverse the chronological order. Chapter 26 is the 11th year, chapter 29 the 10th year, but there's an explanation for that, as I'll show you in a moment. Then chapter 30 at verse 20, and it came to pass in the 11th year, that's back to 586 again. Chapter 31 verse 1, in the 11th year, in the 3rd month, 2 months later, still 586. Then chapter 32, verse 1, and it came to pass in the 12th year, that's 585. And verse 17 of chapter 32, in the 12th year, in the 15th day of the month, that's still 585. Chapter 32. Chapter 33, verse 21. And it came to pass in the 12th year of our captivity, in the 10th month, later on in that year, 585 BC. And then chapter 40, which is the last date we have here, verse 1, in the 25th year of our captivity. Now that's a big jump, isn't it? That brings us down to 572 BC. From 592 to 572, 20 years. That's the span then of Ezekiel's prophecy. Now, of these dates, the first five, up to chapter 24, verse 1, fall in the period before the second stage of the captivity, which was 586, when the city was broken down. So the first 24 chapters of Ezekiel are prophecies uttered by Ezekiel before the city was razed to the ground. That is to say, in the period between the first stage of the captivity and the second, when the city was broken down. And in these chapters and in these prophecies, Ezekiel is intent on doing what I've just described, assuring the exiles in Babylon, who'd come with the first captivity, that they were going to be there a long, long time, and that there was no prospect of getting back in a few weeks or a few months. They were there for the duration, for God's appointed time, and that the city was going to be destroyed, and that this was God's judgment upon the people. Now, that's the subject matter of the first 24 chapters. That's the first half of the book. Exactly half of the book, 48 chapters. And the first 24 chapters are prophecies which assure the exiles in Babylon that worse is to come. They were refusing to believe this, as they refused to believe Jeremiah. But God raised this man up to rip it down their throats, that not only would they not get back for a long, long time, but that the city, their beloved Jerusalem, which they always assumed was inviolable, and which they always assumed that God would never allow anybody to harm, was going to be destroyed by the power of the enemy. A very grim, a very devastating section of the prophecy. And by and large, as we shall see in our studies, there are threefold emphasis in these 24 chapters. The first three, of course, deal with Ezekiel's call and commission, but from chapter 4 onwards, the actual prophecies, we have the abandonment of the people by God because of their sin. Then we are told of the reasons why God had abandoned them and forsaken them. And finally, we are told of the righteousness of God in having abandoned them thus. That's Ezekiel's grim message. And it's very interesting, and I'll point this out more fully later, how in the midst of these chapters, we are told of how the glory of the Lord departed from the temple and then departed from the city. God withdraws himself utterly from this people because of their sin. That's the first half of Ezekiel. And then from chapters 25 right through to the end of chapter 32, we have a section very similar in nature to that middle section of the first half of Isaiah, in which Isaiah gave prophecies against the surrounding nations. Well, in chapters 25 right through to chapter 32, we have a series of prophetic utterances against the heathen nation round about. First of all, Ammon, then Moab, then Edom, then Philistia, then Tyre, then Sidon, and finally, and very fully, against the kingdom of Egypt. And chapters 25 to 32. And in the main, the dates of these prophecies are during the time of the siege of Jerusalem, between 588 and 586, the 10th and the 11th years of the captivity, of the first captivity. During these years, prophecies that were uttered during the siege of Jerusalem. And then from chapter 33 onwards, the dates that I've mentioned all are after 586 BC, that is to say, after the fall of Jerusalem. And in the main, these prophecies deal with the prospects and the hope of restoration for the people of God, with, first of all, predictions about the new order to be established, And in this section you have the wonderful vision of the Valley of Dry Bones. Son of man, can these bones live? The vision of the Valley of Dry Bones referring to Israel in her devastation and in her brokenness and in her abandonment. And the word of the Lord comes that these bones would live and be resurrected. It's a message of the resurrection of Israel and the return of Israel to her own land in the post-exilic era under Ezra and Nehemiah and the others.
And then in the last chapters, chapters 40 to 48, you have a description of the new order that was to be established. And you have the glorious vision of the temple stretching for 8 or 9 chapters.
Here then is a threefold division of the book.
After the first three preliminary chapters, which deal with Ezekiel's call and commission and the vision of the throne and the majesty of God and the hearing of the voice of God ringing in his ears, after these opening chapters, you have the chapters 4 to 24, which are a denunciation of Judah, the people of God. Then chapters 25 to 32, the visitation of God upon the nations surrounding Israel. And thirdly, 33 to 48, the restoration of Israel. Now, clearly, these first 24 chapters are going to make very grim reading. They'll not be without instruction. They'll not be without very penetrating and shrewd judgment as we seek to understand why God judged his people thus, why his glory was withdrawn from the place, and so on. This is the point. And then the visitation on the surrounding nations. And finally, the word of hope, the new covenant, a new spirit, a new heart will I give them, a new spirit will I put within them. Then the vision of the Valley of Dry Bones, the resurrection of Israel. Then the temple, the waters flowing from the temple. So that is the pattern that we're dealing with in the main throughout this book. And as I say, it's really an ordered pattern, and I hope, God willing, to have a sheet for you next week to give you a kind of rough outline which we'll try to follow and divide and subdivide these major sections so that we can study them as entities and really get down to some real analytic study. Now, let me now make some introductory comments from the opening verses. In the first two verses, the first three verses, we are given the superscription of the book. It came to pass in the 30th year, in the 4th month, in the 5th day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river of Kibar, this is Ezekiel speaking, that the heavens were opened and I saw visions of God. In the 5th day of the month, which was the 5th year of King Jehoiakim's captivity, the word of the Lord came expressly unto Ezekiel, the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kibar. And the hand of the Lord was there upon him. And I looked, says Ezekiel, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud and a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and so on, so on, so on. Now, there seemed to be a confusion of dates in the first two verses, but we can hardly suppose that Ezekiel was so confused in himself that he didn't know what to write or when he was speak at the time he was speaking about. And I think the simplest resolution of this problem is that in verse 1, the 30th year refers, in fact, to the 30th year of Ezekiel's life, when he was 30 years old. And he was 30 years old in the 5th year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. Now, I've said that was 592 BC because Jehoiakim was taken into captivity in 597. 592 BC, and if Ezekiel was 30 years old then clearly he was 25 when the captivity took place. He was a man of 25 years when he was whisked away to
Babylon with the king and the nobles and the princes. Well now, work back. If he was 25 in 597, 30 in 592, then he was born in 622 BC. Now, it seems to me that there's a very great significance in this date of his birth. You know, of course, that Old Testament chronology is a very dicey subject. And it's quite on the cards that if you pick up two very competent and respectable commentaries or Bible dictionaries, you'll find a different chronology in each of them. And the fact is that nobody is very sure about the precise dating. For example, one of my dictionaries give the years of the reign of King Josiah as 638 BC to 608. Another gives 640 to 609. Now, clearly, there's just a slight difference in computing these dates with the various sources. And as long as we are reasonably near the period, that's all that matters. But the point I'm trying to make is this. If Josiah came to the throne in 638 or 640 BC, and Ezekiel was born in 622 BC, then Ezekiel was born in the midst of a revival. That's my point. Ezekiel was born in the greatest days of the people of God's history, when nationwide moving of the Spirit of God was evident everywhere. And what is more, this man's formative years were lived in Jerusalem when the prophet Jeremiah was exercising his mighty ministry there. Now there's a double significance for you. It seems to me that there's a tremendous message here. Here was a man born at a time when the Spirit of God was abroad in the land. That's a great time to be born. And here was a man whose earliest memories were of that mighty man of God. I don't know how it is with you, but I'm very sure that there are people in this church tonight who can think back to the days of their youth and perhaps sat under mighty men of God in their boyhood days or in their youth, and it left a mark on their lives that has never left them. That's how it was with Ezekiel. I've known old people in their 80s and more tell me of sitting under the ministry of Dwight L. Moody or Chapman and Alexander at the turn of the century. And you can still sense the awe in their voices as they speak of these mighty times when the Spirit of God was abroad in the land. Why, of course it does something. It shapes a life. That was how it was with Ezekiel. He was born when God was visiting the land with revival and reformation. It's not difficult, is it, to apply this and to make us realize that
the lives of the little children that are born into the fellowship may well be shaped decisively by the Spirit that's abroad among us at any given time. What responsibility! Children born in a time of spiritual barrenness are affected by it. And children born in a time of spiritual renewal are likewise affected. It's a great time to be born when the Spirit of God is abroad in the land. And it's a great time to be growing up when a man like Jeremiah is thundering out the word of the Lord in Jerusalem, even if nobody's listening to him or nobody's obeying, as was the case.
But here was a man who drank it in. And you know, one of the things that the commentators are quick to point out is that Ezekiel's prophecy shows all sorts of influences from Jeremiah's writing. He was a younger contemporary of Jeremiah. And right through, the message is the same. It may well be that Ezekiel was one of Jeremiah's disciples and sat at his feet. But you see the kind of thing I'm trying to get over. Here's the antecedents of this prophecy. Another thing I'd like to say is this. Ezekiel was a priest, the son of Buzi, which was a priestly family, and from what we can gather, he was among the higher echelons of the priestly caste, if you like, and doubtless by heredity designed for high office. And we know from other parts of Old Testament scriptures that priests began to be priests and to officiate in the temple and in the sanctuary at the age of 30. And Ezekiel had come to his time of majority.
And there was no temple for him to worship in, let alone serve in. He was a captive, remember? He couldn't be a priest. The temple was in Jerusalem. He was by the river Kibar.
So that you see, by reason of the captivity and by reason of the sin of his people, and for no fault of his own, he was denied his true patrimony. This is the wonderful thing.
What the tragic circumstances of the time robbed him of and made impossible, God fulfilled in another, a different and better way. He became not a priest, but a prophet. I think that's wonderful.
And I'm sure that's the significance of the mention here of the 30th year. It's as if Ezekiel were saying, here am I in Babylon. By my birth into the family of Buzi, I was destined to be a priest in the sanctuary of the Lord. And here am I languishing by the rivers of Babylon, hanging my harp on the willow tree. And God came to me and said, Ezekiel, don't worry. That may have been the original plan for you, but I have something different and something better. You're going to be my mouthpiece to the exiles. You're going to be a prophet of the highest. Don't you think that's wonderful?
The next thing I would like to say is this.
If we read a few verses, which we're going to do now, we'll see the nature of Ezekiel's vision. Verse 4, "And I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud and a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the midst thereof as the color of amber, out of the midst of the fire. Also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man, and every one had four faces, and every one had four wings. And their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot. And they sparkled like the color of burnished brass. And they had the hands of a man under their wings on their four sides, and they four had their faces and their wings. Their wings were joined one to another. They turned not when they went every one straight forward. As for the likeness of their faces, they four had the face of a man and the face of a lion on the right side, and they four had the face of an ox on the left side, they four also had the face of an eagle. Thus were their faces. And their wings were stretched upward, two wings of every one were joined one to another, and two covered their bodies. And they went every one straight forward, and whither the Spirit was to go, they went, and they turned not when they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, and like the appearance of lamps, it went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. And the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. Now as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of a beryl. And they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. When they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. As for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful. And their rings were full of eyes round about them four. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the Spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their Spirit to go. And the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the Spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When those went, these went. And when those stood, these stood. And when those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them. For the Spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. And the likeness of the firmament upon the heads of the living creature was as the color of the terrible crystal stretched forth over their heads above. And under the firmament were their wings straight, the one toward the other. Two wings of every one were joined one to another, and two covered their bodies. And they went every one straight forward, and whither the Spirit was to go, they went, and they turned not when they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, and like the appearance of lamps, it went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. And the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. Now as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of a beryl. And they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. When they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. As for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful. And their rings were full of eyes round about them four. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the Spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their Spirit to go. And the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the Spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When those went, these went. And when those stood, these stood. And when those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them. For the Spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. And the likeness of the firmament upon the heads of the living creature was as the color of the terrible crystal stretched forth over their heads above. And under the firmament were their wings straight, the one toward the other. Everyone had two which covered on this side, and everyone had two which covered on that side their bodies. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings, like the noise of great waters, as the voice of the Almighty, the voice of speech, as the noise of an host. When they stood, they let down the wings, and there was a voice from the firmament that was over their heads, when they stood and had let down their wings. And above the firmament that was over their head was the likeness of a throne, and the appearance of a sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. And I saw as the color of amber, as the appearance of fire round about within it, from the appearance of his loins even upward, and from the appearance of his loins even downward, I saw as it were the appearance of fire, and it had brightness round about. And as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard the voice of one that spake. And he said unto me, Son of man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak unto thee. And the Spirit entered into me when he spake unto me, and set me upon my feet, that I heard him that spake unto me. Well, that's tremendous. Weird, yes. Unusual. Strange. Bizarre. Eastern imagery, yes. But behind and beyond all the imagery, you feel the thing itself, don't you? The majesty. The glory. What came to Ezekiel, you see, was a vision of the glory and the sovereignty and the throne of God. That's what was given to this man. Bear in mind where he was and what he was. A despised captive of the king of Babylon. And to this one there came such a vision of the glory and the majesty of God, and of the throne of God. Now, there's so much here. First of all, you'll have noticed, of course, the tremendous similarity in essence between this vision and the vision given to John on the lonely Isle of Patmos, where he was for the faith, a captive of another heartless emperor, the Roman Empire. And he was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and the vision came of the throne, of the majesty, of the glory and the magnitude of Christ, and the voice as the sound of many waters. This same voice. Oh, there's a great similarity to the book of Revelation in this whole prophecy. Both Ezekiel and Revelation begin with the theophany, the manifestation of the glory of God. And both Ezekiel and Revelation end with the vision of the holy city. You see, essentially they're speaking about the same thing, the kingdom of God, when Christ is all in all. The theme of Ezekiel and John's revelation are basically the same. But there's more than that. One of the things that this vision is meant to convey is this. Did you notice the sensation of movement? Wheels within wheels, constant movement, going this way, going that, stopping, starting, wheels within wheels. See, the point of that is this. When you're a captive under foreign domination, you tend to think that God is dead. You tend to think that everything is finished. You tend to think that nothing's happening. And from a human standpoint, of course, nothing is happening. But the heavens were opened, And it was as if God said to him, Ezekiel, you think nothing's happening? Look at this. Look at the movement. Look at the wheels. Look at the machinery of the divine sovereignty working ceaselessly. That's something you and I need to see tonight, isn't it? Apply it to yourself. Maybe you think nothing's happening. You've been praying like anything about something. Nothing's happening. And God says, my child, look at this. Look at the wheels. And wheels within wheels. You see? Oh, how wonderful. God was active. Movement is what is suggested here. Ceaseless movement. Thrice blessed is he to whom is given the instinct that can tell that God is on the field when he is most invisible. All we need to do is to put our ears down on chapter 1 of Ezekiel when we're tempted to think that nothing's happening and listen. You hear the whirring of the wheels, the tremendous movement of the sovereignty of God. And of course, the general message here is that of the sovereignty of God. The world was trembling under the sovereignty of Nebuchadnezzar. But God is saying, there's a bigger sovereignty than that. The real sovereignty in the world is my sovereignty. And he's shown the vision of the throne. Here then, Ezekiel's prophecy begins with a vision of the glory of God and of the God of glory. Now, it's very significant to notice, and I want you to look up two references here, chapter 10 and chapter 11. Ezekiel has been given a revelation of the glory of God. And that's the theme of his book, the glory of God. Chapter 10, verse 18. We needn't read the context, but here's the point. Then the glory of the Lord. This is another vision. Let's read back a wee bit. Verse 8 of chapter 10. And there appeared in the cherubims the form of a man's hand under their wings. And when I looked, behold, the four wheels by the cherubims, one wheel by the cherub and another wheel by another cherub. And the appearance of the wheels was as the color of a beryl stone. And as for their appearances, they four had one likeness, as if a wheel had been in the midst of a wheel. When they went upon their four sides. They turned not as they went, but to the place whither the head looked, they followed it. They turned not as they went. And so on, verse 15, and the cherubims were lifted up. This is the living creature that I saw by the river of Kibar. And when the cherubims went, the wheels went by them. And when the cherubims lifted up their wings to mount up from the earth, the same wheels also turned not from beside them. When they stood, these stood. And when they were lifted up, these lifted up themselves also. For the spirit of the living creatures was in them. Then the glory of the Lord departed from off the threshold of the house. You see? The glory of the Lord withdrawing itself from the temple because of the sin of the people. And chapter 11 at verse 23, and the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city. The temple deserted and forsaken by God's glory, the city deserted and forsaken by God's glory. That's the message of Ezekiel. The vision of the glory of God. The glory departing. And then,
Finally, look at chapter 48 at the end of the book. The last verse, after the intricate descriptions of the new temple and the new holy city, it was round about 18,000 measures, and the name of the city from that day shall be "The Lord is there." You see? The God of glory has come back to the city that he forsook. The wheel has turned full circle. That's Ezekiel's message of hope. Now look at this sequence. Begins with the God of glory and the glory of God in the heavens. It ends with the God of glory down in the city among his people. But don't you see, that's the message of the incarnation. This is Ezekiel's testimony to what was to come. What he sees in vision is Jehovah Shammah, the Lord is there, down upon earth. And the book that begins with the vision of God's glory in heaven ends with the vision of God's glory down among men upon earth. The Word was made flesh and tabernacled among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. The Lord is there. That's Ezekiel. That's what we're going to be studying, God willing, in the next few weeks. Let us pray.